The New South Wales government has proposed funding cuts to the disability sector. The move has raised concerns about the ability of advocacy organisations like the First Peoples Disability Network to continue to provide high-quality services to their clients. A lack of culturally appropriate support services to meet the needs of the disabled Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community is also of concern, with Indigenous Australians far more likely to have a disability than the non-Indigenous population. Damien Griffiths is the CEO of the First Peoples Disability Network, and he joins me now.
Hi, Larissa.
Damien, what has been your reaction to the New South Wales government's proposed cuts to funding for the disability sector?
Well, it makes no sense, Larissa, frankly. I mean, as everyone would be aware, we have the major reform of the National Disability Insurance Scheme happening, so there's never been a greater need for advocacy. And in the media, we hear more and more reports of the abuse that many people with disability face, particularly women with disability. So the need for advocacy has never been greater. So this makes no sense at all why there would be funding cuts to a program that is so critical for meeting the needs of all people with disability, but especially our people with disability.
So what do you see as the impact in a practical sense of those cuts across the state?
Well, essentially, a person with disability has no one to turn to other than their family member or their immediate family, perhaps, or a carer to support them. They need as much support as they can from as many people as possible. So disability advocates play a critical role. They do all sorts of things. It might be from supporting someone to get onto the disability support pension to far more complex issues like abuse, for example, or they might even support a person with disability in a police interview, for example. So their role is so varied and so critical, and for that to be defunded makes no sense. It's actually, it's ignorant at best, but at worst, it's almost nasty. I think it makes no sense whatsoever.
Last time we spoke, you talked about the need to tailor the NDIS to meet the specific needs of Indigenous people. Have you seen any progress in that area?
No, not enough, Larissa, and we're losing patients rapidly. 5 years ago, we called for the establishment of an Aboriginal-owned and operated local area coordination or community connector program under the NDIS. We're only seeing that happen in very isolated cases in small trials. We need that to be rolled out. In fact, it needed to be rolled out when the scheme was announced. So we're very frustrated there's been no movement there. This is about placing people that have an understanding of disability as employees within Aboriginal community-controlled organisations so that they can be the supports to get people through the NDIS and into the appropriate supports they need. So it's a critical area of need and needs to be addressed urgently.
Can you just explain for people who might not have a real grasp on this, why there's a need for culturally appropriate services in this area?
So there's a lot of reasons for that, but most importantly, most Aboriginal people with disability don't self-identify as people with disability, and that's a wonderful thing in many ways because it shows that people don't necessarily experience discrimination within their own community. It's when they face external systems like education or employment or, I don't know, you name it really, transport, housing, that are run by non-Aboriginal systems, then they experience very significant discrimination. So also in some parts of our country where support is often of a personal nature, then it's only can be done by certain people, a woman to support a woman, a man to support a man or whatever it might be, or there may be very sophisticated skin group relationships that mean that there are very defined structures about who plays what role within community, and those things are not well understood by the disability service system, and they are most appropriately done or only can be done appropriately by community themselves. So that's why there needs to be a particular specialisation here. And the other reality is that we have very high rates of disability in our communities, and yet the vast majority of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people with disability have been outside of the disability service system, really. So there needs to be urgent investment to get this moving and community itself to own it.
You talk about the central need to engage the community. The First Nations Disability Network recently established the ELDA, or the Elders Living with a Disability, a national advisory group of elders. Can you tell us a bit about this initiative and why it was established?
It was established because the community wanted it, really, and we are obviously adhering to appropriate cultural principles of our elders are the leaders, and our elders with disability also bring that personal experience of understanding their own disability and also therefore understanding the needs in their own community. So it's an initiative that came out of community in Tennant Creek, especially where some of my colleagues have been this week, where the local community wanted to come together, the elders with disability, and make change for their young people in particular in their community. So they have the knowledge of what it's like to live with disability, and by giving them the voice and the leadership role, then we'll be all better for it.
A significant proportion of the Indigenous population live in rural and remote areas. What are some of the challenges facing these people, and how is your organisation making sure that those voices are getting heard?
Well, in a disability context, there really doesn't exist a meaningful disability service system. So what does exist, however, is a lot of people that by any other definition would be called support workers. So a lot of our people do play a really critical role in supporting their community members with disability, but what they lack is the resources sometimes. So it might be as simple as, well, there's no footpaths out in remote communities. So there's no, you could live 500 metres from the store and not get to it. Or there's simply no means, easy means of moving around your community, or it may be that you are in housing that's not accessible, for example. So it's not about the attitude or the stigma that people face. We don't see evidence of that. In our communities, people with disability, it's come as you are, really. Everyone is, a person is a person. But when they start encountering other systems like housing, lack of access, that's when the very significant barriers happen. So that lack of resourcing is a fundamental problem, lack of resources.
So always when I listen to you speak, I realise how complex this area of policy is, and but what a high need there is. And obviously, we've spoken this evening about the impact of the cuts. Moving forward, what are you hopeful will happen in this space?
Well, I think taking a positive view, there's an opportunity here for fantastic employment opportunities. So we would say there already exists a workforce in Aboriginal Australia that is already supporting other community members with disability, and it's been there forever. But what they lack is recognition that they're playing a formal role, and they need to be paid for that role. They have an expertise. So there's an opportunity to generate little economies, potentially, and for people to support one another like it always was. I think in many ways we need government to get out of the way. This is not about a service system coming over the top and intervening, for want of a better word. It's actually about resourcing the community itself to continue to do the work it already does. So what communities might lack is the appropriate wheelchair, for example. It's not the lack of support that people give each other. It's the wheelchair, or it might be the fact there's no accessible minibus in town that can get people down 200 k's down the road. That's the barrier, not the attitudinal side, which is an advantage that our communities have over the rest of Australia, I would say. So we would say we're leaders in disability rights. And in fact, the great story that gets told now out at Lake Mungo, there's evidence to show that there's a one-legged footprint out there, or a one footprint out there. And the belief is that, and there's evidence that a stick is being used. So that would show that that person had a role to play in the community. I believe it's dated 20,000 years ago. So we've always understood disability, always had appropriate responses to it. It's all the labels that exist out there that are the problem. So we're leaders in this space, we would say. It's about resourcing and getting on with the work.
Just finally this evening, one of the things I always admire about you, work in a very difficult area, you're just about to get all these funding cuts, and yet you are still hopeful. You've got a very positive look on life. Where do you get that from?
That is a great question. I'm surrounded by resilient people. So my colleagues, we're not a big organisation, there's only five of us but who work full time, but are all resilient people, and they often have a very personal connection to disability. So I think that's where it comes from, and I wouldn't know how to do anything else, you know what I mean? It's just what you do. It's not a job. It's not a job at all, you know? It's just part of who you are, and, yeah, it's not an easy question to answer, but, I mean, I'm surrounded by resilient people, and that's what is really fortunate, I think, for me.
Well, thank you so much for being with us this evening, Damien.
No worries, Larissa.
CEO of the First Peoples Disability Network, Damien Griffiths.